The story, Say Old Man, Can You Play the Fiddle, was written by Joe McHugh and is read by Joe Newberry, with music by Daryl Anger.
Say, old man, can you play the fiddle? Jason and his father did not get on well with each other. Neither was to blame, and is just the way things are sometimes between a father and his son. The father, too ready to find fault, while the youth allows resentment to set up shop inside his heart for slights both real and imagined. So it was Jason's mother who came up with the idea that her son should take music lessons from a local fiddler. She hoped it would provide Jason with an opportunity to develop a more satisfying relationship with an older man, while getting the boy out of the house one or two evenings a week. Thus, on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons, Jason would jump off the school bus at Higgins Corner and walk up Dutch Run, the gravel road skirting the stream as it gurgled and splashed its way to the ocean 1,000 miles away. Ira Cockrell's farm was at the head of the holler, and it took Jason 20 minutes to walk that distance. He then crossed a swinging bridge spanning the creek to reach the fiddler's house. Ira, meanwhile, would leave off his chores and return to the house so he could brew up a pot of coffee and wait for his student to arrive. The old man had played the fiddle since before he could remember, learning his style of bowing and many of his tunes from his father, a well-known and respected fiddler in his own right. Ira never married and had no children of his own. A year earlier, while in town, Cal Walker, Jason's father, stopped Ira on the sidewalk in front of the bank. "Afternoon, Ira," Cal said. "How's the farm these days?"
"Could use more rain."
"Are you still playing that fiddle?"
"Can't see a reason to stop."
"Well, I was wondering. My wife thinks my son should learn to play the fiddle. Maybe you could give him lessons. I'd pay for the lessons if you're willing." The idea of getting paid to teach the fiddle intrigued the elderly musician, but he had reservations.
"How old is your boy?"
"It's Jason. He just turned 12.
"Is he keen to play the fiddle?"
"I don't think he's given it much thought."
"Then why pay for lessons?"
"It's Ruth's idea. Like I said, the boy does like to sing. Ruth thinks he gets music from her side of the family." "He sure as shooting doesn't get it from my side," Cal laughed good-naturedly.
"How much are you willing to pay?"
"You tell me."
"Well, let's see if your son takes to the idea first, then we can discuss terms."
Ira had never given formal music lessons and wasn't exactly sure how to go about it. Jason had his doubts too, but once he got a violin in his hands and learned how to draw the bow across the strings without it setting his teeth on edge, he was sold. Ira could tell the boy had talent and realized that teaching him would be more pleasure than chore. That was 5 years ago. Jason was now a senior in high school and wondering what he would do after graduation. He was tall and good-looking and the best fiddler in that part of the state. There wasn't anything he couldn't do with a fiddle. Make it sound like a lonesome train rolling through the mountains, a mockingbird singing from the top of a tree, a chicken laying an egg, even a mule braying at a heavy load. It seemed like every weekend he was off playing his fiddle for a dance, a wedding, or a house party. Even so, he continued with his lessons, not because he believed Ira had any more to teach him, but because he was fond of the old man. And when his lesson was done, Jason would stay to talk, or fill the old man's woodbox, or patch the garden fence to keep the rabbits out. He knew Ira's rheumatism was getting worse, and he was having trouble managing the farm. Jason could also hear the decline in Ira's fiddling, but he never said anything about it for fear of giving offense. Ira knew all the standard square dance tunes, but the way he played modal tunes was unique. Shaking Down the Acorn, Elzick's Farewell, Pretty Little Doll. The melodies burst from his fiddle like a thunder of rough grass breaking cover, catching the listener by surprise. Jason would know Ira's fiddling anywhere, even though the old man's left hand was failing, and some of the notes had lost their clarity.
Making music is about giving something of yourself, Ira would tell his young charge. It's not the same as what a blacksmith does making a set of horseshoes, or a lawyer drawing up a will, or a miller grinding the farmer's corn. Those things are important, and part of the business of life, the buying and selling of the provisions that keep us alive in this world. But a person can't eat music. You can't wear it like a coat to stay warm, or enter it like a house to keep the rain off. Music is for the soul, not the body. You've got to be careful with things that have to do with the soul. They are gifts.
The old man sipped his coffee before resuming his sermon.
Well, I've known my share of fiddlers over the years, and the truth is, Jason, God has given you a rare talent for music. It's a gift you've been given, and it's your duty to share that gift with others.
A duty? Jason asked, genuinely puzzled.
To whom much is given, much is required, Ira answered. It's in the Bible, Luke 12:48. Now, I'm not saying people can't pay you a little something to play for them now and again. Used to be I got paid by the dance, a nickel a dance from each couple that was doing the dancing. But the music was still a gift that I was giving them. I know it ain't the easiest thing to understand, Jason, but if you want music to be a blessing in your life and not a curse, and mind you, it can be a curse, then take what I'm saying to heart.
Ira would look intently at Jason after one of these lectures to see if his words hit their mark, but it's easier to peel a raw egg than to tell what a young person is thinking. Jason did his practicing without being told, an hour or more a day. Then Jason graduated from high school, and the lessons ended. He had no interest in college or in learning a trade. All he cared about was fiddling. He did, however, land a job with a natural gas company, traveling around the county checking on the company's gas wells and pumping stations. The pay was decent, and he married a girl he had dated all through high school. Her name was Julie Ann. She was the daughter of a dentist who lived in town. She was also voted the prettiest girl in the graduating class. Still, pretty or not, she was no fool. And she urged Jason to devote more of his time to his job and raising a family than playing the fiddle.
Oh, you're gone every weekend playing music somewhere. Why can't you spend more time at home? Don't I make you happy?
Jason hated these conversations. He loved Julianne. Hadn't he married her? But fiddling was his life. Not just fiddling, but competing in fiddle contests. That really heated his blood. Some fiddlers got nervous before a contest, so nervous their playing went all to pieces. Not Jason. Competition spurred him to play his very best. And he loved winning. There was no feeling like it in the world. The way the other fiddlers looked at him after the head judge handed him the blue ribbon and the envelope with the prize money. He saw the envy in their eyes. They wanted to be him so bad it hurt. Girls, too. They loved a winner. And sometimes they followed him out of the hall, angling for a way to hook his attention.
Excuse me, but do you have change for a dollar so I can buy some chewing gum?
Or,
are you related to the Walkers who live in Charleston? No? Well, you have the same nose. You really do. All the Walkers have the same nose. See, I've got a Morris nose. It's kind of short, but it's cute, don't you think?
And he might escort the girl home, or take her to the ice cream parlor, or maybe they would hunt up a moonshiner. It all depended on the girl, and share a jar together. Now that was some fun. A year after they were married, Julie Ann gave birth to a baby boy. A year later, she gave birth to a girl. Jason got a promotion, but with the promotion came a heavier workload, which cut into his time for fiddling. This made Jason petulant, and he took it out on Julie Ann.
Why do you have to drive all the way to Wheeling this weekend? She asked one evening when he got home from work.
I told you, there's a fiddle contest, and the winner will get to play on the radio, on the jamboree.
But I told you that Mama's birthday is this Saturday, and you promised we'd go to my parents for supper.
We'll go next weekend. Your supervisor called yesterday. He said you missed an important meeting.
Did you tell him I was sick?
I'll cook your meals, Jason, and I'll wash your clothes. But I won't lie for you.
Well, where do you think I was if I wasn't at work?
That's not my business.
You got that right. My fiddling and what I do with my spare time is my affair.
The word affair made her ears smart. That is what she suspected. It all went together, the fiddling, drinking, and womanizing. The baby started to cry, and that ended the argument. While she nursed, she heard the truck start up and drive off. Well, she wasn't going to wait another week. She would go to her parents' house on Saturday, just her and the kids. Lord knows, sometimes she was tempted to throw his fiddle in the fire. But she knew that wouldn't change anything. He would just get another one, and off he would go again. If he kept on like this much longer, she would, by God, get a divorce. She still had her figure, and Buddy Samples, who managed the supermarket, flirted with her every time she went shopping for milk and eggs. He wasn't as good-looking as Jason, but she could do worse. At least he was interested in her and wasn't a slave to the fiddle. That Saturday, Jason took first place in the fiddle contest in Wheeling. He drove back the next weekend to perform on the Jamboree. To his credit, he did bring his contest winnings home, but thought Julie Ann should be more appreciative. It takes money to live in this world, if you haven't noticed, he told her. And if I can make a little extra with my music, well, I don't see what all the fuss is about. It ain't the money, Jason, and you know it, she would fire back. I swear you're away so much traveling for your job and going to contests, the kids will grow up not knowing who their father is. These arguments only made Jason feel sorry for himself. He was an artist. Couldn't she understand that? In this way, resentment opened the door for pride and ambition to gain mastery of his heart. And like the writer who wishes another writer ill because his novel just made the bestsellers list, or the painter who takes no pleasure in his own work because the paintings of another artist hang in the museum, Jason Walker had to be the best at playing the fiddle. Some of the fiddlers he competed against he had known for years. Several had become close friends, or used to be. There was a time when after a contest he would join them back in their hotel rooms, and they would play music and tell stories and drink whiskey until dawn sent them to their beds. Or he might spend time with a girl. Not anymore. Now he went back to his room and practiced his music. He practiced at least 3 hours a day, and if he slacked off for some reason, he knew it. Others might not, but he did. And if he could tell the difference, he allowed the judges could too. So he kept at it, ignoring the cost. His closest friend was a fiddler named Charlie Edwards, and Charlie had a signature tune he played in every contest he entered. It was a fine, complicated version of Durang's hornpipe, and Charlie more than once walked away with the top prize playing it. So Jason decided to show Charlie up. He spent the better part of a winter perfecting his own version of Durang's hornpipe so he could, as he often bragged to himself, beat Charlie at his own game. He went so far as to copy, note for note, bow stroke for bow stroke, the most intricate passages of Charlie's rendition of the tune, and then he added a shock of embellishments and complex bowing patterns of his own. In the spring, he and Charlie were both entered to compete in a contest in Cumberland, Maryland. Charlie went first. He played his Durang's hornpipe, and the audience clapped and whistled when he was done. When Jason's turn came, he stepped out on stage and played his version of Durang's. There was no mistaking his intention. He aimed to show the audience and the world that he could play rings around Charlie Edwards and anyone else if he had a mind to. The crowd went crazy, and he won the contest. But afterward,
Backstage, he was surprised when his old friend wouldn't speak to him. He heard later that Charlie gave up playing the fiddle. His taste for music soured. Try as he might, Charlie couldn't find a way to make it sweet again. Jason shrugged off the whole episode with the excuse that Charlie was a sore loser. If that's how he wants to be about it, then that's his lookout. But I aim to be the top fiddler in the country, and nothing or nobody is going to stand in my way. Competition fiddling is like college football in that it can be difficult to say for certain which fiddler or team is the best in the country when the season is over. A number of fiddle contests build themselves as the national championship. Given, however, that organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce or the Elks Club sponsor the contests, it is wise not to put too much stock in the claim. So one year, Jason set himself the task of winning all the big contests. That way, when all was said and done, there could be no doubt as to who was the true national champion. It became an obsession with him. And he spent so much time traveling from contest to contest that his bosses at the gas company threatened to give him the sack. He started out by winning a contest in North Carolina and followed that up with another win in Nashville, Tennessee. He then went south and won two more competitions and finished up the summer by taking first place in a contest in Kansas. That left only one more national championship contest to win, and that was held in Idaho. Jason arrived at the convention center where the contest was to be held late in the afternoon. His back ached from driving 12 hours a day for three straight days, and he needed to get some sleep. But he paid his $20 entry fee and received his number. It was number 17, which pleased him because he had won a contest 6 months earlier with the same number. 2 hours later, the list of contestants was posted, and Jason recognized many of the names. They had come in from every part of the country. Some were no more than teenagers, the up-and-coming young fiddlers that everyone was talking about, much as people once talked about him. A few of the contestants were women. A handful of the older fiddlers had been around the circuit for decades, seldom winning, but always trying. These older men made Jason feel uncomfortable, although he couldn't figure out why. Perhaps it was how some of them hung out in the bars after a contest playing for drinks. Jason took his supper alone at the hotel before making his way over to the convention center. Backstage, he found the other contestants milling around, waiting for things to get started. Many were anxious, whether they showed it or not. They were thinking about what the audience and judges would think of their playing and half afraid they would mess up somehow. But Jason was true to form, calm and confident. His thoughts and will were focused on just one thing: winning. That was all that mattered, to be the best. Why else had he spent all those hours practicing until the joints of his fingers ached so badly that he had to soak them in ice water to keep the swelling down? It wasn't about the money, or getting a recording contract, or one day playing backup fiddler for a big-time country and western star. No, it was about being recognized as the best. It was that desire that brought him to this very night, to win this last in a series of contests. But to take the top prize, however, he knew he couldn't be just a little bit better than the other fiddlers. Each judge had his own way of ranking the contestants. One judge might not care for a tune a fiddler chose to play. Or another judge might think the fiddler didn't smile the way he should, or that the audience didn't like him enough, or too much. It was never straightforward, so Jason knew he had to be plenty better than everyone else, so much so there could be no doubts. That was the goal. The contest at last got underway. One fiddler after another, in order by the number drawn, stepped onto the stage and gave it his or her best. As Jason listened from the wings to each contestant, his confidence grew. Number 9 was good. That was Bill Orland from Wisconsin. And number 12 was better still, a young woman from New Mexico who he had played against only once before. Good fiddlers, most of them, but not up to the mark when it came to beating him. Then, as contestant 15 launched into his second number, an odd feeling stole over Jason.
Suddenly, everything felt strange and out of control. He was hot, flushed, had a sour taste in his mouth. His stomach turned. Was he having a heart attack? He was too young for that. Maybe it was something he ate at the hotel, or he had a touch of the flu. There was still a contestant, number 16, before his turn came to play. He needed to get some air, so he pushed open the backstage door and stepped out onto the loading platform. He took a deep breath of the pine-scented mountain air and felt his head begin to clear. The queasiness left him, and he rubbed his arms to regain his vitality. He had only a few minutes before his number was called. Cricket song filled the night. A summer half-moon shone down on the cars and pickup trucks in the large parking lot behind the convention center. Jason found his thoughts stealing away to the days when he was a boy growing up in the mountains. On such nights, he would go raccoon hunting with his father, or sit on the porch and play his fiddle to the whippoorwill and the other night creatures. The memories filled him with melancholy for something cherished but lost. He wanted to linger, but he knew he had to go back inside to compete. He could not allow his mind to be enchanted by the bittersweet phantoms of his youth. He pulled the door open and went inside. He removed his fiddle from its case and checked the tuning, while going over in his mind the tunes he would perform. Red Apple Rag, followed by Lonesome Moonlight Waltz. But his concentration was suddenly arrested by the music he heard coming from the stage. Like a boxer stopped cold by a Sunday punch, his senses reeled. He knew that music. There could be no mistaking it. Only Ira Cockrell played a tune that way, with those odd shifts in tempo and the notes, not pretty or fancy, but splashing and gurgling like the clear water of Dutch Run during the spring thaw. Jason was listening to the sound of real, old-time mountain fiddling, the kind of fiddling he seldom heard anymore. He was both excited and puzzled. What in the world was the old man, he must be in his 80s, doing playing in a fiddle contest way the heck out in Idaho? It was 10 years or more since he visited his teacher. He meant to stop by lots of times, but something always seemed to come up with his work, or he had to drive to a fiddle contest someplace. Oh, but it was good to hear the old tunes played that way again. It was like hearing them for the first time. A wise woman once said, "Memories are gods." Along with the music, Jason also heard deep within the recesses of his mind the old man's voice talking about music being a gift and not something to lord over others. A fragile thing was fiddle music, an arrangement of momentary tones coaxed out of a contraption made of the thinnest pieces of wood and held together with hide glue and strung with wire, weighing little more than a breath, an object that a child might crush under his foot as easily as breaking an egg. The violin, so like the human voice, laughing and calling people to dance, or have a bit of fun, or reaching into the dark, sad places to help a person remember. One could draw from the well of life playing this kind of music, but there was the chance of ruin, too, for the man with the demon of pride in him. These words came back to Jason on the notes of the old man's music, and each, like a hammer stroke, chipping away at the hard, brittle shell of selfishness and cupidity he had allowed to isolate his heart. He swayed, as if suffering from vertigo, his breathing short and rapid. Then, a bitter shame washed over him, so immediate and real, it felt as if acid was burning his skin, the hard words spoken to his wife, the lost friendships, the false kiss of the stranger, the hollow emptiness inside. How could he have strayed so far from the joys of life? Could he find his way back again? Then the music was over, and he could hear the audience applauding. The familiar sound called him back to himself. His face was wet with tears. He slipped the fiddle and bow back into the case and snapped it closed. He was the next contestant to play, only he wasn't going to play. Not in this contest.
not in any contest. He had only one desire, to find his old teacher and thank him. Thank Ira for everything. He hurried onto the stage just as the old man exited the far side. He started to follow after him, but was stopped by the master of ceremonies, who grabbed him by the sleeve.
"Hold on there, fella," the man said cheerfully, addressing the audience as much as Jason. "Where are you off to in such a hurry? And where's your fiddle? You can't play for these good people if you don't have a fiddle."
Jason turned toward the waiting audience, but the bright stage lights rendered them invisible. He could, however, hear some of them chuckling.
I can't, he stammered. I mean, I've got to find someone. It's important. You'll be disqualified if you miss your turn. You realize that, don't you?
I do. I don't want to be in this contest. Jason freed himself from the MC, who then turned to the audience.
Well, I guess there's a first time for everything. Must be some kind of emergency. The show must go on. Would contestant 18 please join us now on stage?
He looked down at his notes.
Our next contestant comes from Fresno, California, and her name is...
Meanwhile, Jason hunted backstage, but couldn't find Ira. He went out into the parking lot, but there was no sign of the old man. Maybe he was staying at the hotel. Jason grabbed his fiddle and hurried to the hotel, where he searched the lobby without success. He asked the girl behind the registration counter to check if they had a Mr. Ira Cockrell staying in the hotel.
"Let me look," she said, and flipped through the box of registration cards. "No, there's no one with that name staying with us."
"My name is Jason Walker. I'm staying in room 219. If Mr. Cockrell happens to check in, could you please tell him I'm looking for him?"
"Jason Walker?" the girl said. "I have a message for you."
She handed him a slip of paper. The message was from his mother. It read,
"Ira Cockrell passed away earlier today. The funeral will be on Wednesday. I hope you can get back in time. Love, Mom."
In less than an hour, Jason was on the road. He made it back just in time for the funeral. He then set about trying to convince Julie Ann that he was a changed man. He continued to play the fiddle, but he stopped going to contests, stopped staying out late and running after women. Gone was the pride and ambition. Julie Ann had hired a lawyer without telling her husband, and the lawyer had begun drawing up divorce papers. But 2 months after Jason's return from Idaho, Julie Ann let the matter drop. If Jason continued doing his best to be a good husband and father, then she would look to the future, not the past. And of all the days of the week, Saturday mornings were extra special for Jason Walker. That was when he gave lessons to the young people of the community who were drawn to fiddle music. He didn't teach them the fancy tunes he knew. He taught them the old-time tunes that Ira taught him. And he talked to the young people about music being a gift, a wonderful, magical gift that becomes all the greater the more it is given away.